Hey everyone, welcome to the Virtual Classroom Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. Today on the podcast, we have Chelsea Gill. She'd been on the podcast before during season one, and we spent a ton of time then talking about RTI and reading interventions in a virtual classroom. Today, we're talking about the flipped classroom method. Raise your hand if you've ever used it. I've only used it a handful of times, but Chelsea's instructional practice was built on this method. So while you're listening, think about how can I use the flipped classroom in my virtual classroom? Without further ado, here's Chelsea.
So I am Chelsea Gell, and I am the RTI coordinator at Oregon Virtual Academy. So I work with students and teachers in K through 12. Mostly though, most of my caseload kiddos are at the elementary level. But you know, I do get some that are in the middle school. Very rarely do I get any in the high school, but you know, I'm always available to help those teachers wherever and whenever they need it.
Absolutely. And you've been on the podcast before in season one, and we talked about RTI. So anybody, just a little plug here, if anybody listening wants to know more about RTI and how to do that in a virtual world, go check that out. But today we're talking about the flipped classroom. And so we'll start with you. What is the flipped classroom in your words? If you had to make up your own definition, how would you describe that to someone?
Yeah. So what I would say is that what is normally or typically done in a class and what is normally done as homework is switched or flipped around. So basically that homework piece becomes the in-class activity and your normal in-class lecture type style becomes the precursor to class. So it's what they have to view and know before coming to class so they can actually apply those skills in class.
And why is that? That's how you described it better than I would have. I like how you said the homework piece comes, is switched. So that was really relevant. And so, but in a virtual world, we don't always have homework. At least in an elementary world, I don't. They have coursework to do. So
yes.
From my experience, I'm getting ahead of myself. So why is this beneficial? Why should teachers do this? Maybe not every time or maybe every time, but why should they integrate this into their instructional practice?
Yeah. So as virtual teachers, we know that there are like umpteen amounts of curriculum that students have to get through and they have to, you know, be exposed to, but we only get to see them, you know, an hour, 2 hours a day. So it's really hard for us to feel, or maybe this is just my own experience, but from my experience, I felt like it was me lecturing for, you know, 50, 55 minutes, and then the kids would just go off and do an exit ticket and be like, see you tomorrow. I really wasn't sure if they were like engaged or like if they were understanding the content. And for me, I was like, what in the world can I do? Like, how do I get these kids to really understand the material? How do I know? Because a lot of my SMART goals were based on, you know, student engagement and participation and their growth. So how in the world am I supposed to gauge that when I myself don't even know how to do that? And so I really did a lot of, you know, kind of research. And luckily I had Katie Pointer, who was doing the flipped classroom model for fifth graders when I hadn't arrived. And so I was like, ooh, this sounds really interesting. The kids seemed to enjoy it. She really loved it. And her co-teacher at the time also loved it. And so I kind of just, my first year, just observed her while continuing to just tread my feet and understand what in the world I was doing. And then I had a conversation with her at the end of the year, kind of about how it works, what to do. And so we started talking and I was like, oh my gosh, I really like this. Like, I want to learn more about it. And so I did research on it and I started to implement it. And I was also getting my master's in education at the same time. And my project that I had to do was, you know, whatever topic I wanted around education. And then I figured, well, why not bring light to virtual ed? Because there's literally nothing out there. And I had tried to, you know, do internships through like virtual ed with my, you know, different endorsements, and all of them were like, no, we don't do that. We don't know how it works. So I was like, fine, I'm going to show you how it works in virtual ed. Let's do the flipped classroom model, because I had had a year of experience using it and had found huge results. And I know there is a lot of, well, kids don't like it. Like, why do we do it? I get it. But at the same time, my kids were the same way. Like, they were like, really? You're expecting us to do extra work on top of the 40 billion things we already have to do every day? And I said, yes, but here's the reason behind it. And, you know, groans, grumbles, moans, you know, complaints from parents that this is not fair. Why are we doing this? This is extra work. And come lo and behold, the end of the year, I had some of the highest engagement, highest, you know, passing rates for my kids for their courses. And I had parents that were emailing me saying, thank you. I actually saw my child grow educationally through, you know, using your flipped model. And it's really not a lot of work for the kids. Really, it's quite simple for them. And it gets them more engaged in class because they get to apply the skills that they just learned about in the class session. So it's
right
for me. I love it.
Right. Now, I've used the flipped classroom in very minimally. Like, for example, in fourth grade, we have novels. They read the book packs. So I'd have them read packs. Like, if the lesson that day for their whole group was to go over chapters 1 and 2, they would, of course, need to read chapters 1 and 2 prior to coming. So that way we could actually manipulate the content, talk about packs that they hadn't read packs. Obviously, they're not going to succeed. So in my opinion, that is a very small version of flipped classroom, but that's as far as I've gone. So how else could teachers be using this flipped classroom, both reading, math, science, history, all of it? What are some practical ways that they could do the flipped classroom?
Yeah. So the biggest thing to know is that when you're looking at the flipped model and you're trying to think out, how am I going to make this work for my, you know, my area of expertise? The first thing you have to do is you really have to sit down and you have to think of the pros and cons. That's what I did, is I really thought about, what are the pros and cons of this? Like, is it really beneficial? Is it something that I have time to do? Because it is time consuming for, you know, you to start it and get it going until you get into a rhythm and you understand the process. Like, I can do it pretty quickly because I've done it for so long that I know what exactly to do. Yes, I haven't been in the classroom for 2 years, but if I were to jump into a classroom this next school year, I could hands down easily get it going again. And it's super easy because I have templates and I have a routine and I know the system that I can upload it to get to the kids, which I can get to later. But I think the biggest thing to really look at and to think about is when you're looking in terms of like Bloom's taxonomy, because we look at Bloom's taxonomy, we're all, you know, we all have been just like over inundated with it, you know, use those types of different taxonomy levels. And the biggest thing is that Bloom's focuses on those lower level objectives, I guess you could say, because they're really more for a lecture style teaching, whereas you're looking at memorization of facts and it's really passive learning. It's not engaging. So I think of kind of using Bloom's taxonomy as almost like an ineffective way to help those kids really move to an area where they need to be, which is that zone of proximal development. And you want it, there's three bubbles. You want them, you know, there's the first bubble where they've mastered it, they get it. There's the middle bubble where that's where you want them to be. It's a level of comfort, but it's also a level of uneasiness for them because you want to challenge them in going 1, 2, 3 steps further. And then the outer bubble, obviously, if you're in the outer bubble, you're too far. Like, you've pushed them too far to where it's just more confusing for them. So you kind of almost have to understand Bloom's taxonomy and Vygotsky's zone of proximal development. You have to kind of know both of those and really to understand how integral those pieces are to the flipped classroom model. And so when I look at that, I don't want my kids to be the lower level, because I'm not knocking teachers who just do lecture style, because sometimes that's what works for them. And it sometimes that's what works for kids. But for me, I'm more about, I want to be up and moving and engaged. And obviously I can't do that in a virtual environment like I could a brick and mortar. So I have to kind of like adapt it. And so that's where I bring in the flipped classroom model, because it's active, it's engaging. You're moving into breakout rooms. You're working with small groups, or you're working with one-on-one students who still don't understand that concept. And so really you can apply this then that to any subject. I mean, you look at when I create my videos, and like you said, I've done novel stories using the flipped classroom model, and it actually works out amazing. So what I would say for you is to kind of take it one step further, is you actually create your lesson like you normally would, but that lesson is like your vocabulary, main teaching points of those specific chapters or chapter, whatever you're looking at. And then you create no longer than a 10-minute video of you just basically recording yourself in your PowerPoint screen of what you're talking about. That is quote unquote your instruction. That's the flipped part. And that's what the kids then watch prior to them coming to class that day. So like when I always told students, and I did the flipped classroom with fourth graders and sixth graders, so I've done different age ranges. And so what I told them is watch your video, read the book. I also provided like audio recordings for them to listen to so they could follow along. And then when you come to class, we'll do a quick recap and review of what's in the video. And then we jump straight into applying that content. It's all about, those critical thinking skills. It's the application. It's that whole synthesis piece is what class is about. So that way, then they get real-time feedback from me and their peers. And we're able to have those deeper, meaningful discussions in class.
I was going to say, I love all that. And I've been reading these two books, and I'm going to plug them, but they're not paid sponsorship or anything like that. They changed my perspective. So there's one book called Understanding Rigor in the Classroom by my idol, Robert Marzano. He even says there's a place for lectures, but it's not every place. But he talks about how to make those lecture styles and that type of content, like, because a lot of content like science and history are going to be lecture kind of base, whereas math is more performance wise. But he talks about how to make those rigorous. And so when you're talking about coming back and actually manipulating the content, made me think of, I can apply these types of strategies there. And then it also reminded me of this book, The Power of Student Teaming. And when they come back, we can actually do team tasks and instead of just me lecturing. And so I loved all the things that you said, because yes, we do need to know, we need to know those Bloom's taxonomy or Marzano, really they say whatever, because they're all pretty much the same, but to make that part, from what I understand and from what you said, taking those lower Blooms and making that before, so that way when they come to my class, we can do those higher, more rigorous Bloom taxonomies. Am I getting that right?
Correct. Okay. Completely correct. Cool. Yes.
So let's take a second and I guess just talk about what that could potentially look like. And we talked about a reading class. Could we talk a second about math class? Because I'm having a hard time wrapping that around my brain, because I don't teach math and I don't understand the struggle. So how could I potentially use the flipped classroom model in a math class?
Yes, perfect. So before I get started on that, I do also want to plug another book, no way sponsored. But when I was doing my project for graduating, the really good book that I found was called The Differentiated Flipped Classroom. And it's a guide to digital learning. So it really helps you kind of wrap your whole brain around like what the flipped classroom is, how you can use it with digital learning. It's not geared towards like virtual ed, but it gives you kind of that whole perspective of how it can be beneficial and how, you know, we can tweak things to make it work in our environment as well. I loved that book. I love the title of it already. I know. The differentiated flipped classroom.
Because we're always differentiated flipped classroom in a digital environment. Like, that's everything that we aim for as virtual teachers.
It's so perfect because we all want to differentiate. And that's what the beauty of flipped classroom is. You can differentiate because you can create multiple types of activities for them to show mastery. And the biggest thing to take away with that is that it's the flipped classroom model is not about creating umpteen different types of ways and assignments for kids to do it and do the same type of activity. The goal of the flipped classroom model is it's all the same. Your goal is the end goal. You want them to understand the content, but how you get there is going to vary for every student or groups of students that you have. And it's the same with, you know, teaching. Every year is going to be different. And so with math, I've never been able to create the math lessons for flipped classroom because I always did reading. So I can't like explain, you know, real well, oh, this is XYZ what you do to create a PowerPoint. However, I've seen multiple videos done using the flipped classroom model with math in virtual ed. Katie Pointer is like the go-to guru for that because she teaches math. So she uses all of her lessons and she does them in the flipped classroom. So what she does and what I've seen is that she takes the topic from, you know, the curriculum, and it's like if it's fractions, multiplying fractions, then she creates like an actual lesson as if she would teach it normally in a live class, but she teaches it. Here's the processes and the steps. Here's a few examples. And the website that we use is called edpuzzle.com. And that website, I mean, is amazing.
I've heard lots of it, but go ahead and tell me more. Cause the one time I tried to use it, I didn't get it to work right.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am tech savvy. What is it? What is my problem? So maybe you tell me more.
Yeah. I mean, it can be very confusing at first because there's just so many ways and directions to go. But you create a teacher account and then you can create a classroom for your students. And then those students basically are housed in that classroom. You create a login for them. And that's what they use to log in to watch your videos. And I have a whole like slew of videos that I created many years ago on how to use the flipped classroom model, how to log in to Edpuzzle, all of that. I can find those and I can like share them with
you. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Anyone.
Yeah.
So sure I'll find anybody would love those.
I'll find them because I know like when we switched from getting away from Gmail, a lot of our teacher videos that were, you know, linked with our Gmail when the school got rid of it, our videos were lost. But I think I have all of mine saved, like I downloaded them. So I might just have to re-upload them to Google. Gotcha. But I will find them and I will definitely send those to you because those are like super, super helpful. But basically, you know, in a quick overview nutshell of Edpuzzle, you can upload your own videos or you can search for other videos from teachers in your own school that have created them, or anywhere. Like, it doesn't have to be just you or your school. You can search anyone's. And you can use their videos as well to assign it to your students. And in those videos, you can add quiz questions. So like true, false, multiple choice, you know, fill in the blanks, and, you know, just a text box for them to answer. You can trim the video to fit your specific needs. So like if you're taking a video from someone else and you don't need the whole 10 minutes, you only need a certain section of it, you can cut it and trim it to just the section that you need. The other great thing about Edpuzzle, and again, I'm not sponsored or plugging them for any reason, but is that you can actually check the box to where if the student moves to another screen or brings up like another screen on another monitor and they're not focused on that, the video stops.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that accountability.
Yes, it's huge on accountability. And the other thing that I love about it is that when you assign it to students, you can go in on the teacher's side and you can see real life progress of where they're at, how far they're at. And then after each like section of the video, typically after every question or so that you have, or it breaks it up into even chunks, students can go, like they can rewind per se and go back a little bit and rewatch it. And it'll tell you like, oh, Johnny watched this section 3 times while he only watched the first part, you know, 1 time. So it kind of tells you, it gives you good data to where the kids might be struggling.
Might be confusing to them. And yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the questions I look at and say, okay, where are most of the kids getting the question wrong? Like, and then I look at it in terms of, is it A, did I word it poorly, which I've done before, or B, are they truly struggling on this? And I look at all the kids and I can see, you know, oh, they got 80% right. And then I can click on that student and see which questions they missed. Or I can sort my questions and look to see who got most of them wrong. And then what I did is I would look at that list and then I would say, oh, clearly we need to spend a little bit more time defining this specific, you know, section. So like for math related, we would always take a question that was from the lesson and we'd bring it into the live class and say, okay, we're going to review this really quickly. Let's go through the steps and the processes. And then we do 1 or 2 problems depending on how well they understood the content. And then basically we would break off into breakout rooms and there would be differentiated activities and the kids would be able to choose, you know, which color of room they wanted to go to. And those colors were based on the 4 levels that everyone is all, we're all switching to, like, you know, you don't want the kids to be level 3 or 4. We would have, you know, level 1 would be like, you didn't watch your weekly, we call them weekly starter videos because they had to watch them at the beginning of the week before class started. So we would say, oh, didn't watch your weekly starter video, go to room 1. Or go to room 2 if you're still confused on some of the information. And then, you know, room 3 is like, you know, basically you're just applying the concepts again to get more practice. And then your high level is you're applying it to like a real world problem. So I was always, at first I was petrified because I was like, oh, all these kids are going to just do the easy way out. Like, you know, like we all want to just do the easy way out, call it good, we're done. I was so shocked that like 70 to 80% of my kids would be in levels 3 and 4 right away. And I would notice that some of my kids that often didn't participate in my lecture style classes were very, very participative in my flipped model classes. And they would actually challenge themselves. And maybe it was just, yeah, maybe it was just my classes because I told them that like one of my SMART goals was related to watching their weekly starter videos. Maybe they knew, oh, we don't want to let her down. I don't know. I hope that's not the reason. I hope it was because they truly wanted to challenge themselves.
Yeah, I think they do. I do goals. I think most of us do. We make goals. And I've seen the generic kind of goals. Like, I get this. But I try to make mine very specific to the content in which I'm teaching that day or that week, that unit, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that many of my kids did not want to be a 2. Like, I can do this with help. They did not want to be that. Even my lowest participating students, my least engaged kids, did not want to be a 2. So that it goes along with what you're saying. I don't think they want to be there, like in those categories. They don't want to think of themselves that way. They don't want anyone else to think of them that way. So you're almost holding them accountable and forcing them to themselves to analyze their own thinking and seeing, where am I? And I don't want to be there. So what do I need to do to not be there? So, I think that's incredible.
Yeah. And I think the important thing is that if you keep the kids accountable and they know that they're being held accountable, you're going to get more buy-in. I mean, at first it was hard for the kids to get into a routine of, you know, logging in, checking. It's a lot. Again, I don't want to scare anyone for saying that it's a lot of work, because I mean, it is in a way, but it's so rewarding.
What it sounds like to me, it's a lot of front loading. And yes. So that you're doing this a lot of heavy lifting prior to the kids, so that way they can then do the heavy lifting mm-hmm. when you're with them. And that was one of the things that I saw. You mentioned it earlier, and you're talking about a lot of good things, so I don't want to interrupt. But one of the things you mentioned earlier is that you were able to give them feedback. According to the research that I found too, that's true. You're going to be able to see kids actually doing the skill and that you're teaching them and be able to give them that high quality feedback. And that's a huge benefit. And so going back to the puzzle, Ed puzzle, I love all that. And yes, it will be, it sounds like it's a hard work to make their accounts, but this year we have the class link, which is like Clever, or if anybody knows what those are, with so a single login. So that will make it a little bit easier in the sense that they just log in and set up in their class link and then it's done. They'll just click on that link and then they can go into their Ed puzzle. And so that'll make it a little simpler for them to get there. And then one thing that I did like that I know about Ed puzzle is that you can put, well, I say this now, I'm not so confident. You can make your own videos, obviously, like through a Screencast-O-Matic, but you can also find other videos just like on YouTube, right? Or some other source like that and put those in. Okay.
Yeah. So they don't have to be all teacher created. One coworker that I worked with when I taught fourth grade, he just went and searched for, you know, math videos, whatever the topic was, and he would just link those in, which is totally fine.
Okay, if I say this, but K-12 in their curriculum has videos, and so the one that I did, it was private, like I didn't share it with anybody, so it wasn't breaking any copyright laws, but I used Screencast-O-Matic to record the video within the OLS lesson and made my own question, so they were still getting that content and from K-12, but I was adapting it to meet my state standards because that's an issue that I face sometimes. Is that something they're the lessons are great, but they don't quite ask the right questions.
Yes,
that meet our state standards. So okay. So that's something in case there's someone listening out there that is running into that problem. That's something that they can do as well.
Yeah, so, and I want to say too, like,
go for it
for anyone like wanting to try and dabble in this next year, like start small. Like don't feel like you have to go like all in. That's my type of personality. If I'm going to do something, I'm going all in. So I went like all in the whole year that we did the flipped model. And I created all of my content from scratch because I just wanted it to be authentic, but don't feel like you have to do that. And I would say even start out by finding a video on YouTube that works for one content subject or topic that you're teaching. Try it out. See how it works. Then, you know, reflect on it and maybe in a month or so, try it again. But maybe this time you try creating your own content video, but maybe it's super short. Just take baby steps. Like you don't have to be all in 100%. So that's what I would say.
And so my next question with that is, how often did you do these videos that they need to watch? I heard you say weekly, they need to watch the weekly video, but so was there one thing that they had to do prior to, or was this almost a daily thing? How often did you do these types of activities that they had to do prior to coming to your live session?
So typically what I would do is I would, like Thursday afternoons, I would start creating my content that I was going to record for the following week's lesson or topic. So then I would record it and I would make sure that it was uploaded into Edpuzzle, ready to go and assigned to students by the Friday afternoon before the following week. That way it would be ready for them if they wanted to watch it over the weekend. They could watch it over the weekend or when they come in to class first thing Monday, it's ready to go. Because they didn't have to have those videos done until Tuesday. If it was, and how it worked for us is I taught Tuesday, Thursdays, language arts. focused. So they, in order for them to come to class prepared, they had to have watched their weekly starter video for language arts before Tuesday's class started. And so for math, it would be before I taught math class, they'd have to watch their videos before Wednesday. So they would have, you know, Monday, Tuesday, or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, depending on, you know, how often, how they wanted to do it, to watch their videos. So they understood what we were doing that week. I created my videos every week for the whole school year. So that's like 38 weeks of videos. Some weeks had more content that I needed to pre-teach. So there were sometimes two videos that they'd have to watch for language arts. Most of the time that was for when we were doing novel studies and I needed to get through like vocab content and just quick overviews of stuff. And I only had like 10 minutes per video to record, and you want to keep those videos short. You don't want to have a long drawn out video, because we know the longer we talk in a video, the less engagement and the more kids are going to zone out. So you want those short, quick, almost like micro learning session. So,
and that's the way we are too. We want them short. Yes. Do what you want for yourself. So,
yeah. So I know like Katie's videos for math were typically, you know, 10 minutes. Sometimes she'd go up to 15 minutes because if it was a big topic, she'd really need to make sure that those kids understood it. My videos were typically right on the mark at 10 minutes. And then like my other co-teacher who just pulled videos from like YouTube, those videos were anywhere from like 3 to 6 minutes. So they were pretty short.
And those are like edited. Them. Yeah. And those videos are like edited and graphic, yeah. I'm sure.
That's, oh yeah.
Using technology that I don't know how to do. So.
Yeah. And I'm like, if I can make a video like that, yeah, that'd be perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it worked out good. And I had pretty good return on like students actively watching it consistently every week. The other thing that I did is I would always send out an email like before language arts class on Tuesday mornings, usually around like 9 a.m. I would send out an email that would say, hey, I noticed you haven't watched your weekly starter video yet. Please make sure you log in and, you know, here's the link, blah, blah, blah. And then it would give them about 45 minutes to make sure they're ready to go, log in, watch it. And then if they popped into class and they still hadn't watched it, I would jump on the mic and say, hey, Sarah, I need you to still watch your weekly starter video for me. Please set yourself to away. And that was part of their, you know, morning to-do list. They knew that they had to do that. And then once they had it complete and it was 100% done, then I wrote their name up on the board before class started. So they would get a recognition of, hey, yes, awesome, I've got it done.
I did.
Name's up there. I did it. Yeah. So that was like a little incentive for them too, because they all wanted their name up on the board, but they only got it if they, you know, they had their name up there. And I'd have kids that were like, well, I watched it. And I'd be like, message them. And I'd say, I only see you've done 80%. And they'd be like, oh, darn. Like, they think that they could have outsmarted me. And I'm like, I can see.
It tells me, Missy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would always tell them in class, I'd be like, I can see where you're at, where you're struggling. So be honest with me. I'd rather you be honest and tell me I didn't watch it than try and sneak out of it and lie to me, because I don't like lying. Lying's not okay. And so they, you know, quickly realized, okay, she knows what she's doing. Like she's watching. But honestly, like it's really, once you get into a groove, it's super, super easy.
All right. So we talked about the before. So mm-hmm. Ed puzzle. So now what do you do with them in the class? So, and we talked about how there's several different activities, but could you give to help me brainstorm and create my own ideas, what are some of the things that you're most proud of that you've done in your float classrooms? I know you constantly, your main content is reading, but so mm-hmm. what are some of the activities that you're most proud of that you've done once your kids have watched these videos and came to class? What have you done with them?
Oh my goodness. That is a good question. Trying to think, like, I mean, there's been so many activities that we've done that I just, oh my gosh, there's just so many. Typically, like we start out, you know, with a review or some sort of, you know, refresh your memory type activity just to get them up and going. If it's for like a novel study, we're doing like what I would, I called it vocabulary four square. So basically, you know, they'd be sent to a groups of four, they'd be given a vocab word that was in the weekly starter video, and they'd have to basically define it using the definition. And I'd always give them the link to dictionary.com. They'd have to find maybe facts or characteristics about it. They'd have to give me like an example sentence, and then, or examples of the word, you know, of what are some other examples of how I could use this word? Maybe what are some synonyms or antonyms of the word? And then they'd have to come up together with writing a word in a sentence. They could either individually do each kind of box in the four square, or they could work together as a team and do it. It was kind of, I left it up to them. But, you know, that was kind of what we did with novel studies, is it was more like apply the vocab terms, and then we get straight into like questions of where we would just look at, you know, what are some of the takeaways from that chapter, and we'd have really rich and deep conversations of how to use that. When I look at, and I try and think of like math, trying to think of like different examples, like I said, we'd always have a room that was, you know, for kids who didn't watch their weekly starter videos. And they would go there, they would drop down there, and then when they were done, they knew that then they could go to a different room and apply, you know, the skills that they just learned. Some of the other rooms were just like, sometimes we'd take, you know, examples and activities from the curriculum, and we'd like implement them into the class, because then students, if they did the work, we could then, you know, mark it complete for them. So that way they come to class and then they didn't have to worry about, oh, we just did this, but now I have to do it as an assignment for my daily plan as well. So those were some other activities. A lot of it was just stuff that we pulled, you know, from previous curriculum that we had been given, or previous PowerPoints that we've been shared with, or sometimes we'd go like on Teachers Pay Teachers if we were trying to find a topic. One thing that we did was, you know, like kind of like create your own house using different, you know, kind of math topics as a review. We kind of did that towards the end of the year, 1 year. So kids would have to go in and do different, they were at different steps of the process. And they would, you know, do that step, and then they'd be able to jump to the next room and do that step to continue on their project. And so, I mean, there really is no right or wrong way to implement the flipped classroom, which is great because you can kind of make it your own. If you're wanting to focus more on collaboration as a whole group using the flipped classroom, I would say, you know, do more like whole group discussions where you're getting into discussing more in depth, you know, using your synthesis skills and all of that. But if you're looking at more of, you know, just your simple, I just want to give them a multitude of activities that range from, you know, lower level to higher order thinking skills, then you can do that of multiple activities. And I don't want to say, like, yeah, there's no, like I said, I mean, the biggest thing is that there's no right or wrong way to do it. The biggest thing is that when you're thinking of the flipped classroom, is that in a traditional classroom, your role as a teacher is basically the graphic that I reference all the time is called, it's the teacher is the sage of the stage. Basically, here I am lecturing at the top, and the kids are just sitting there with blank, you know, blank faces, not really understanding what they're doing. But then you think of the flipped classroom, and the teacher's role changes from I'm at the front to more as I'm a guide on the side type of thing. So I'm an equal with you, and I'm learning amongst you. Like, I learned so much more from my kids, and I was like, oh, I never thought of it that way, or oh, that's another interesting way to do it. So you really kind of become an equal with the kids, and they feel more comfortable voicing their, you know, reasoning behind it. Because my biggest thing was, I always said, you have to justify why. Why are you doing this? Why are you not doing it that
way? Which is
way?
Like the number one thing. So in this rigorous book, at the end of literally every activity, and this book is full of examples, it asks them to summarize their learning and justify their reasoning. So if you instantly want to make something rigorous, you ask them to summarize and explain. So
yes, yeah. Exactly.
I loved everything you said. As I mentioned before, I read this book called The Power of Student Teams, which is something I really want to do this year. But part of it is you jump right into the student team task. So here's just one that they have. Like, use a this is a high school one, by the way, but I can use I could look at high school and dumb it down to fourth grade, and that's a terrible way of saying it, but you know what I mean. So
yes.
So use a text source, Julius Caesar, to analyze how an author unfolds an analysis of a series of ideas and events. Include the order in which the point of views are made, how they are introduced and developed, and the connections that are drawn between them. And then the team task is have a team discussion by explaining and justifying your thinking about the difference in the text, organization, development, and connection. And so I could do that with PACs. And so, but the issue is that I was thinking, how do I give them enough time to do these tasks when I still have to teach? So I love these ideas, the videos of this flipped classroom, because I can get those little nuggets of teaching to my kids. And then they can jump right in and start on their task. And I can be more of a facilitator. If they're the one kid struggling from that group, then I can pull that kid and work with that kid individually. And so I love all this. It's an answer to one of my questions that I've been having of how am I going to teach these little mini lessons prior to my kids working together. And so it's the flipped classroom model. That's my answer. So
yeah, I mean, it's basically removing yourself from teacher-centered instruction and moving to student-centered instruction.
That's exactly what the teaming is. It's going from a lecture to not even like a group. It's how you normally think of it. But the kids are, the goal is for the kids to be teachers themselves teaching to their team. So one kid gets it, they can teach to their team. Anyway, that's a whole different conversation.
I did see pieces of that though in the group activities that I have some of my most shyest kids who would be like, I don't agree with you on that. And I'm like, what? Like,
how dare
you? It wasn't necessarily they were disagreeing with me, but it was like they were having like really good like discussions about how to come up with the answer or what this truly meant. And they were having rich discussions in their breakout rooms.
Which is what we all want as teachers. We want that. And sometimes I feel teachers think that's impossible in a virtual classroom, but it's so far from that. And so you mentioned at the beginning that you had some parents that were frustrated by the flipped classroom model. And you also mentioned how you have kids who wouldn't watch them. And I heard you say some ideas of how to minimize that, whether indirectly, like putting their name on the board when they do it, putting them in a breakout room and forcing them to do it if they come to class. But how do you, so are there any other things to get kids to, obviously my frustration's coming out because I want all my kids to learn. I want them to learn. That's my number one goal in life. And so I work really hard to make that happen. And I will still have kids not read chapters one when I'm like, you have the book. We emailed you we gave you the book, and then it's also embedded into your lesson. How could you not read the book? So what are your suggestions on how I can raise that I don't know how else to say that. How do I minimize that from happening? And how can I increase the good behavior to happen? So what are some other things that you might have done to help raise that engagement or that participation into the watching the videos or reading the books or whatever it else it may have been.
Yeah. So a couple of things that I did is, you know, because I go like all out and I want to have, you know, as much information available to students and parents, like I want to make it as transparent as possible and I want them to know the reasoning behind it. So what I did was I would actually, like, if I noticed a student was not participating and watching those weekly starter videos consistently, because I had a tracker that I tracked it to see if they did it and kind of like what their percentage was each week of mastery. So I could kind of see over a longer period of time, longitudinal, like, okay, when it comes time to conferences, you're really struggling. So like, maybe it's because you're not watching your weekly starter videos. So I would actually call parents, and some of my parents would get phone calls more than others because they knew they needed to have their child watch it. And once I started to create that relationship with the parents and they understood the process, then I would get better buy-in and feedback. And like when I got new families every week, I mean, I would run them, I'd send them an email with, please watch these two videos, I think it was. It explains the flipped classroom model. It explains how we use Edpuzzle to log in. And I mean, those parents, you know, they're already struggling enough as it is trying to come in late. I mean, but they would get their child on board and they would do it. But, you know, we always are going to have those students and those families that don't pick up the phone. They just don't interact. And for me, it's really frustrating and it's hard for me to just like let it go because I want everyone to benefit. I don't want to have kids keep falling further behind because that's just not how I function. So it was always hard for me.
That's how I function too, which is where my frustration was coming from.
Like, yeah. And so I would try and breakout rooms. Like I would try and get them engaged. I would try and have them talk to me. I would, you know, send them messages. I'd be like, if you hear me, can you like give me a green check? Or I'd be like, well, looks like Samantha's floating out in the abyss. I hope she'll come back to me. Like, and I would say funny stuff like that in class and the kids would start laughing. And then I'd start to get them, you know, to come back. But I mean, it's just, you can't get everyone engaged. And it's so hard. But I mean, some of the feedback that I even got from students was that, you know, it's a lot of work, but it helps me become more ready and prepared for class. And the kids knew what to expect. Like they knew.
And you keep saying that 10 minutes is not a lot of time. So no. I feel like this list, I measure things with like SpongeBob and yes. As my son gets older, you know, the different shows that he likes, but I'm like, that's less than a Ryan's World episode. Like that's less than whatever. So you watch YouTube videos that are longer than that. You play Roblox for hours, like 10 minutes of your time.
And the nice thing too about Edpuzzle or anything that you create and you upload is that it's available as long as they have an account. Like I always tell my students, like when we were prepping for state testing, I was like, go rewatch your weekly starter videos from, you know, September, October, November. So you can remember all that information so you're better prepared when you come time to take your state test. Or if I get an email from a parent or a student that's like, I don't understand how to do this. And I'm like, oh, we covered that in our weekly starter video. I'm like, go watch your weekly starter video from this week. You know, here's the date.
Yeah, I could make them and name them based on the state standard. So that way I'd be like, go look up 4.2 or whatever, you know, whatever the state standard is. Or I could put, is there a way to put like hashtags in them to where I could put like hashtag main idea and so they would all pop up if they clicked on that? That would be handy.
Know, I don't
if not, maybe they should.
Maybe I know. Maybe
Ed Puzzle, if you're listening, do that.
Yeah. And I mean they are constantly updating their site and I haven't used it much in the last couple of years, so it very well, you know, could have changed. I know like from the time I started using it to the time I stopped, it had, you know, a lot of things had changed and updated and had become better. So my guess is that you know, yes, I'm sure you can probably use hashtags because everything allows hashtags now. But if not, yeah, I agree with you. Edpuzzle, if you're listening, let's get some hashtags going, because
that would make it a lot simpler for anybody like me, or a parent or a student, if they're looking through just mine. But then as a teacher, if I'm looking, I mean, obviously there's a search. So even that would be helpful, just a search. And I could put that as a keyword or in the title somewhere. I think of, with this regard, with the state testing involved in review, I think of USA Test Prep, where they can go in and see the skills that they're missing and they can work on those. So it's kind of the same mentality. They can go back and work on that particular skill and watch this fun video or hear me teach this in a different way, and than in class or on USA Test, you know, wherever. And that could be a big help to them. So,
yeah. And I think there's an email I saved from a parent of a fourth grader that I had, I want to say it was like 4 years ago now. But she really, like, she broke it down in terms of the positive effects of using the flipped classroom model and Edpuzzle in particular. So I don't know. Do you want me to read it?
I was actually going to ask, like, what's the best feedback you've gotten, and then how did you overcome the worst feedback, or what was the worst feedback you got and how you overcame, you know, whatever. So
yeah,
go for it.
Yeah. Okay. So this one, like I said, is from a learning coach of a fourth grader that I had during the 2016-2017 school year. She said, "I just wanted to take a minute and let you know the positive effects I've seen in my fourth grader since you introduced the Edpuzzle weekly starter videos. After she's been primed with Edpuzzle, she knows what to expect in class. Once the ice is broken on a new concept, I see is more participation and a greater understanding of the subject. Eliminating that first introduction in a class setting and letting it happen for my student at a time of her choosing also helps plant the initial seed so it can be fostered in class with guidance successfully. I've seen improvement in the book work pertaining to the subjects being taught as well. She seems to better grasp concepts without as much help from me. I know, Mom, Mrs. Gill explained it already. I got it. I appreciate the Edpuzzle weekly starter videos because they have accelerated my fourth graders' learning, making virtual class time less frustrating and lightening the teaching load for me." So
I love all of that.
I mean, it gives me chills. It's like 4 years old and it still gives me chills because that right there is all of the hard work that I put in, all of the long hours of recording videos, the frustration of things like not working correctly. That right there, like, is just amazing. And the biggest takeaway is that the student and any student can watch the video at any time that they feel like, as long as it's done before the deadline. So if they're up at like 2 a.m. working on homework, which I don't understand why some kids are up so
at
late.
Fourth grade, no, let's go to bed.
that they can watch that video and they feel comfortable. And it also then extends into those kids that normally don't talk in class or participate in class, have now got an introduction to what they need to do. And now they can come into class, maybe they're still not confident, but we're going to continue to review. But they feel more as an equal with their peers.
I also think from a teacher's perspective, it takes away that first lesson. Instead of spending 30 minutes on all the intro stuff, it takes that. And so you can dive on into that. And then also from a student perspective, it's teaching them at a fourth grade level, or what in your case, a fourth grade level, in my case, a fourth grade level, but even a younger grade level, it's teaching them to be independent with their learning. Because once they get to middle school and high school, and especially college, and now that I'm working on my doctorate degree, it's completely independent. So these are skills that they need to have. And the sooner we're teaching them how to do this, or at least fostering it, or as simple as watching an Edpuzzle video and answering a couple of questions on their own time, that's going to foster into greater skills as they go down the road. So so I love all of that. And then, so that's the positive. So You did tell me that you had some negative feedback that parents weren't liking it. And so what was your exact wording or, you know, like a generalization? Because parents are my number one concern with any job. I feel like I'm always in customer care. It takes me back to my bank teller anytime I have to talk to a parent. And so it just gives me anxiety just thinking about it. Not that I don't love parents. I do. And I can't do this job without them. But that's stuff that I worry about. And I know I'm not the only one. So what are some feedback that we might be able to prepare ourselves for? And how do we generally combat that? And I mean, I could take everything that you just said to combat that, but what are some of the worst feedbacks you heard about this, and then how did you turn it around?
Oh, man. I'm trying to think. I mean, I would say that, you know, the negative feedback that I've received from, you know, it's very few parents. And I think it really stems from they don't know what to do. And then it falls on me to go, okay, I clearly did not explain this well enough. Like, I need to sit down and I need to re-look at my content that I'm disseminating to students and to parents. And I need to look at it from a different lens. Because I have to, sometimes I over, like, I'll skip things thinking, oh yeah, they automatically know this because I know it. So I've gotten better at it over the years, but sometimes I really have to step back and say, okay, I need to, like, literally be like, take your left hand, get the piece of bread out, you know, that whole task of how do you, you know, create a peanut butter and jelly sandwich step by step, that type of mentality I get into. And I've started to like, oh, okay, you know, that I see where I messed up there. So a lot of the times what I did throughout the year is I would hold like open office hours, or I would tell parents, like, if you don't know what to do or you're struggling to get this to work, like, give me a call. We can set up a separate time to talk about it and go over it. Because a lot of the times that anger and frustration isn't like directed towards you in terms of this is stupid, we're not doing it. It's more of a, I don't know what I'm doing and I'm frustrated, so just tell me what to do or I'm just giving up type of thing.
Or so yeah, and I also like thinking about me and my previous frustrations, it could be like, I'm just not going to get this. I don't get it right now, so I'm just not going to do it. And so it could potentially be that as well,
yeah,
where it stems from maybe previous experiences.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you had this bad experience, so now I'm going down the same rabbit hole, and I know I'm going to have the same horrible outlook that happens again, and I, you know, try and make it so it's not. So that's why I really spend time with families to make sure they understand it and know what to do. And like, I'm a huge proponent of just doing, like, if a student or a family doesn't know what they need to do to log in, I'm like, okay, instead of me just verbalizing it to you, let me just create a little video for you, and I'm going to send it to you on the exact process of how to do it.
With Screencast-O-Matic. Yeah. I mean, like, with Screencast-O-Matic, you can make it have a password, so that way it stays FERPA friendly. So I love that, and I love that's what you do too, because it's like, that's what I do. So
yeah. Yes. Yeah. So it's very helpful. And I mean, those are typically like the negative comments that I get. I've never received a comment that's like, we refuse to do this. This is ridiculous. I've never seen it, because I think I front load so much information, like on what the flipped classroom model is, how it's beneficial. Like, I go into that so the parents know, like, why behind it. Basically, I tell them that we're not, like, the reason we're doing this is because I'm taking the how you do this out of the classroom. I'm giving it to you beforehand. So you come to class and we're now doing this is why we're doing this. This is, you know, we're building our skills to be successful in the real world, because we don't go into the real world and go into jobs and doing an isolated job where we have no contact with anyone. Like, we have to learn how to communicate with one another. We have to learn how to, you know, say, okay, yeah, this might not go my way right now, or, oh, we're going to go a different direction than I thought, but we're still going to get to the same end goal here. And that's exactly what the flipped classroom model is. We're looking at different pathways. We're going different directions, but you're still getting to that same exact end goal at the end. That's the whole basis of it.
And it all sounds more fun. It sounds, That's what I'm about. I'm about the fun. So if it's not fun, I don't want to do it. And I think most people in their hearts of heart, they're the same way. They don't want to do anything they don't want to do. I actually sing this song, and my son sang it the other day when I was talking about my discussion board last week. And I was like, I don't want to, but I'm gonna. And he was singing that the other day about something he had to do. He's like, I don't want to, but it's just like me trying to make this more fun, even if it's negative.
Yeah.
But the flipped classroom model sounds so much more fun than me lecturing and then giving them like a test or a homework activity or something like that. So this sounds like something that if I present it in that way, if I say, well, we could do this, but instead we're going to do this in the flipped classroom model and what that is. And research shows that it's one, more beneficial for your student because we're going to be raising the rigor and they're going to get more out of it and more social interaction because they're going to be working with their peers. And then on top of that, it's more fun. Like, why not? So why not do that? And so I loved everything you said about the flipped classroom model. So it's definitely going to help me with my team, my student teams that I want to do this next year. I really want to do that because the main reason why students tend to withdraw is for, at least what they say, is social interaction. They're not getting enough of it. Mm-hmm. And so this, even as a flipped classroom team, all of that together sounds like they're going to get more of that regard. But is there anything else about the flipped classroom that we should talk about, but I just didn't ask about?
You know, I think we've kind of really, really kept it, you know, right on to what my points that I wanted to talk about. I think the only thing is that in my research, you know, when I was researching all about flipped classroom model, in particular to like video creation, and I, you know, I kind of touched on it earlier, is that, you know, you don't have to go all in for it. Like, just start slow, start small, see how it works, get feedback from, you know, your students and your parents on, you know, how it's going. You know, that's what I did, is I just constantly was asking for feedback from the kids and the parents. Like, how do you like it? What is there that I can change? What do you like that wants to stay the same? But in my research, I found this article by David Raths, and it's called 9 Video Tips for a Better Classroom. And basically it focuses on how you can start up your, they call it the flipped strategy. So basically asking, you know, yourself about, you know, how comfortable are you with technology? Obviously, most of us are pretty confident with technology in this environment. But it also says, you know, like, how do you curate others' materials? How do you combine your own with others? And then again, starting small, you want to start small, because otherwise, if you try and go all out like I did, you're gonna get burnout real quickly. I didn't, luckily, but it was because it was a passion of mine. So I was like so excited about it. But then you need to get student buy-in. I mean, clearly, if you don't have student buy-in, then there's no way that you're going to be successful at this. But just making sure that they're aware of that. And then teaching those kids how to watch the videos, that's like the most important thing. Is I spent a good like 2 weeks going through, like, you know, every couple of minutes before class, the end of class, I would go through how to log in, and I would screen share how to log in, what you need to do. And then I would make sure that they had their information to log in, and I would send an email to them. And then I'd go into their email and pin it to the top of their inbox, so they always had it there. Then obviously you want to teach your parents, because they need that help as well. Especially since they're the learning coach or whoever the learning coach is.
Definitely at an elementary age, you want to have those parents involved for sure. So,
yes. Yeah. And I think the biggest, the last 4 kind of things on that article that I found for the tips were encouraging your students, but don't punish them. I think the biggest thing that sometimes you want to go to is, oh, well, you didn't do it. Oh, well, yes, you have to go down to that room. But don't lecture them in class. Like, don't say, oh, Steven didn't do his weekly starter video today. So, oh, well, he needs to go down there. Like, you can just say, if you didn't watch your weekly starter video, make sure you hop down into that room. Or those kids that would just go MIA when they log into class, I would drop them into that room.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could just drop them in our world. Yeah, but in new row, I'm not sure if it's going to be that easy, but
yeah,
I hope so.
That'll be different. That yes. And then the biggest thing too is to not use the videos as your only source of engagement. So like change it up, you know, make video. Yes, you're going to want to make videos obviously for them to watch, but change up how you do those videos. Mine were pretty consistent in terms of the layout, but that's just how I knew my students learned the best. Like, use your students that you have that year and see what you can do to, you know, change it up, flip it up, I guess. Flip up the flipped classroom model, I guess.
I was thinking I could do like my own video and then like the next week, find one, like just whenever one's already made and then just try to keep it. Another teacher that I used to work with, she's still here. I'm at a different grade level now. But she had like different masks. And so she always wore those. And now I'm like, use like ManyCam or the Snap, the one that you use, I forget.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Snapchat filters.
And so, yeah. And so, like different ones like that. And just change it up. So see what Mrs. Ring is or what Mrs. Gill is that week. And so just silly stuff. Kids like
and
that.
Sometimes I would also put in Easter eggs into the lessons, and those would go like in the beginning or the middle or the end. Some weeks I'd be like, there might be an Easter egg in there, and there's really no Easter egg, but it keeps them on their toes, because they would be like, oh, what's the Easter egg, like, ooh, what's it gonna be? And sometimes it would be like, surprise, like you're gonna get out of class 5 minutes early for the next week or whatever. Like sometimes I'd make them just like super fun.
Yeah.
So it wasn't always tied. Or sometimes I'd be like, surprise, you're going to get a lesson marked off. And I mean, little did they know, it was like this lesson that they were already doing. But like I would, you know, kind of like do little things like that. And then I also tried to find, they call them fellow flippers. And so you want to find other, you know, teachers who are using flipped classroom model pretty consistently. So I was lucky enough to have Katie, who introduced me to it. And then like, totally like made me go and like do my own thing and like really dive into it. I know not all teachers, you know, have someone who's already doing it, but I mean, just going on Edpuzzle alone, you can find thousands of videos for any subject. I mean, it's just, you could spend hours on there finding different things to do.
Awesome. So sounds like one of the best practices for the flow classroom is Edpuzzle, and trying to change that up and put questions in there. And then once they get to class, do a quick review and then dive right into the higher blooms, those tasks, those things that you are trying to get to from the get-go. Is that right? Or that it in a nutshell? Okay.
That's perfect. That's like a great nutshell summary.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I so appreciate you and sharing all this information about, oh my gosh, the flipped classroom. So like, what were we talking about? The flipped classroom. Thank you for coming on, and my brain just being so overwhelmed right now with information. So, but it was all very practical, and that's what I love. So thank you for doing that for us.
Yes, not a problem. And like I said, I can post though. I'll also link those videos in my bio on Instagram on the link tree. So that way then anybody has them there, whenever they want to watch them, they can.
That'd be awesome. I love that. Yes. And all right. Well, thanks. Chelsea really wants to share these resources with you. You can find her on Instagram at virtual.reading.teacher. So virtual reading teacher with a period in between each word. You can also find a direct link wherever you found this podcast in the description of it. At the very beginning of this podcast, I asked you to be thinking about how you might use the flipped classroom method in your classroom. Unfortunately, We spent a lot of time talking about how to use this method in an elementary classroom. My bad. I just have no experience in a middle school or high school, but this podcast is about making connections. And it's not all about me, and it's all not all about Chelsea. It's about us. So head on over to our Instagram or to our Facebook. Find this post and share how you're using the flipped classroom method in your virtual classroom. We'll learn from you and hopefully learn from each other. So thanks again for listening and have a phenomenal day. As always, be brave, take a risk, but most of all, have fun. See you next time. Bye.